Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael and I'm excited to be joined tonight by Alex, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you, Michael. Good evening. How are you?
Great, great. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
I have a question for you, Alex.
Oh, good. Yes. What is it?
How many ways can we remind ourselves to be present?
Oh, let me count the ways. Well, that's an interesting question because it's my experience that there are lots of different techniques and practices and things to do. And, of course, the biggest issue, at least my, you know, from what I've looked at since doing practice, is remembering to do them.
Uh-huh.
So in the morning, I'll decide that I'm going to, every time I see the color green, I'm going to, you know, stop, take in three deep breaths and, you know, get present to what's here and, you know, maybe say, you know, a little reassurance, like, I love you.
Yeah.
And then I get to the end of the day and all that green that's passed by and I didn't say it. I didn't do it.
Uh-huh.
And so that's just been my passion lately, is to look and see what kind of different ways I could use to remind myself to do these practices.
Great. Great.
And we live in a great time, actually, where we have all these little digital gizmos and things like that, that, you know, I've noticed that several times on the radio show, folks have mentioned the vibrating watches.
Yes.
And that's certainly, you know, I had one at one point until its strap broke off, but where it would buzz periodically, and that would remind me to stop and do those things.
Yes, yes. And what are some of the other ways that you've?
Well, the one that I'm currently doing right now, and I really enjoy it, is wearing a necklace that reminds me to do the practice that I've set out to do for the day.
Uh-huh.
So every morning what I do is, I don't know if folks know the two books, Making a Change for Good and Transform Your Life that Sherry has done.
Yes.
But the Making a Change for Good has a retreat in the back of it.
Yes.
And I'm doing the retreat, as far as I can tell, nonstop. So
yeah.
The way I remind myself, because I've had those situations where I'll go throughout the entire day, and at the end of it, I'll be like, oh, that would really been nice to have actually considered all these things that I was, I had intended to look at.
Yes.
And then it just occurred to me that I could have something that is in front of me all the time and that would cause me to look down and look at it. So the necklace,
yes,
is basically just a piece of plastic that holds cards inside.
Yes.
And on the front of it is the assignment for Making a Change for Good.
Oh,
and on
great.
The other side of it is the Transform Your Life quote and assignment for that day.
Oh, that's fun.
Oh, it is really fun, because I'll stop and I'll just look at it, and all of a sudden I'll just have, I just recall one in particular. I was taking a walk in the morning and I just stopped and read it, and boom, I just had this amazing experience of, wow, that's exactly what I was looking at.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So you have that little plastic sleeve there on your necklace.
Yeah.
And then each day you just put in the Transform Your Life assignment and the Making a Change for Good assignment.
I do, yeah. One on each side. So I flip it over and look at it. You know, and so for folks who are out in the world and don't want to have something that looks like they're carrying their visa or passport on, around their neck,
yeah,
you know, you could easily do things like keeping things in your pocket, someplace that you just generally look, you know, putting things up on your walls wherever you're working or spending time being. You know, we often make posters of our commitments and things that we're trying to remind ourselves of. And I found the trick with that, too, is to move stuff around.
Yes,
because
when it's,
you know,
when it's in one place, after a while, I stop seeing it.
Exactly, yes, right, yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, just moving things around constantly. It's almost like conditioning just wants to close everything over and stop us from actually remembering these sorts of things. You know, we refer to it as stupid dust. You know, at the end of the day, I've just been sprinkled with a load of it, and I don't recall that I'm doing practice, or I don't recall that I've set out to do what it is that I intended to do. And
yes,
these are just little things that I like to call stumbling blocks, you know, just things that, you know, because conditioning throws stumbling blocks in our way too. And what's fun about the practice of being active in the way of doing the, you know, awareness practice is to turn the same kind of tables on conditioning and throw stumbling blocks in its way.
Yes.
And, you know, we can do that by just setting things up in our environment. And I like to think of it as a game.
Yes.
That's really helpful to me because, you know,
yes,
the picture of awareness practice is often one of, you know, this grisly thing that I need to do that is really hard to do and that I get beaten up every time I forget. And it doesn't really have to be that way at all.
Yes, yes, that's my experience as well. And I've had fun on retreat. I've been encouraged to do a twist tie around one of my fingers, which is fun.
Exactly. Yeah, so if you're, you know, you can you do jewelry, that sort of thing, if twist ties aren't your look. anything, look down, you know, keychains, you know, that have something that will remind you of something that you're trying to bring awareness to. People here at the monastery will also be, you know, we do masking tape with, you know, magic markers and all sorts of things to write things and messages on pieces of paper ourselves and just to constantly remind ourselves about what it is that we're doing.
Yes, yes, yes. I've had fun with rubber bands around my fingers too. And
that's right, yes.
And switching fingers and all that.
Yeah.
And the thing that I like about what you're pointing at is there are these techniques, and behind that, what I see in doing the techniques is really an affirmation of my commitment to practice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's making a statement. It's taking a stand for, you know, that this is the life that I'm here to live. This is my birthright to be free and not suffer, and I want to bring all my attention to that. And part of that is, you know, our attention can only be in one place at one time. And so it could either be here or it could be in suffering.
Yes.
And so, you know, if you think about it as a big pie, you know, it's like if my attention goes off in this direction, you know, then there's, you know, there's this big chunk of a time where my awareness is going off towards suffering. And I'm trying to turn the tables on it and doing anything in my power to, like I said, turn the tables, to saturate myself, or, like, have reminders around myself constantly about all the things that I know that would support my heart. And we live in a really good time because I feel like that's, you know, everywhere I turn, there's a practice opportunity that's available to us. There are retreats, there are email classes, there's the radio show, there's endless sorts of things that we can do. I mean, there's peace storming that we're going to be doing. There's the bridge walk that's coming up on October 4th.
Yes. Yes, it is a wealth of opportunity, and for me to have found this practice and these opportunities seems like an amazing blessing.
Yes, it is. And we just need reminders.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. It's great, and I love the way you described it. Of the vision I have is that I'm bringing things into my environment, my physical environment, my touch, my vision, anything that interacts with me that reminds me of what I'm attempting to do.
Exactly, yeah, so that there's always something there that assists me and that is there to redirect the attention to say, hey, yeah, that's right, this is what I want for my life.
Yes, yes, this is what I want for my life. Wonderful. Thanks for all these tips and tricks and ideas, Alex.
Oh, sure, Michael. I like to think of them as a big tackle box of tools, games, and reminders for the awareness junkies out there.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Michael.
Good night.
Have a great show. Bye-bye.
Bye. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I love that. I
oh,
love
good.
The conversation that you two guys just had.
Great.
That's just, you've just captured my heart right there.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So. You have some new tricks and ideas to try now?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, the conversation is doing what Alex is encouraging us to do. So it's availing ourselves of every moment that we can find. Everything that helps us to remember, as he says, you know, that this is who I am, this is the life I want. And so just listening to a 10-minute conversation between two people talking about all of the things it's possible for us to do to stay awake is just another one, you know.
It's an
auditory twist tie.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah. So it's wonderful, and I've just started a big new project. We're doing this 3-month thing, the name of which escapes me at the moment. Living Beyond Karma.
Yes.
And so as always, when I start something like that, I've just plunged into this world that people live in with the voices of self-hatred. And it's just so incredibly sad to me. And of course, I project to them. Because what we're doing is talking about what we want to focus on for the next 3 months. So each one of us, you know, I mean, it's what we do all the time. It is this practice. So, you know, I'm going to make a commitment to doing something over the next 3 months. And then the primary thing is to become even more aware of what the voices do to try to stop me, and then to prove to myself that they don't need to stop me, that I can, in fact, make a commitment and stick to it and be free of all of that. And the voices are just so miserable and hateful, and these really good people who want to do just simple things like be alive and enjoy themselves, and they're not allowed to because the mere suggestion of anything that they would enjoy just activates this onslaught of self-hatred. And it just, just the importance of what you were talking about, everything that we can to remind us, this is who I am, this is what's possible for me, this is what's true, this is what's real. No, those voices, those hateful voices, do not have the real, true information about me. No, they're awful and miserable and need to be extinguished as quickly as possible.
Yes. Yeah. And what I like about the new practice opportunity, what I'm getting out of what's being offered, is it's almost like trying to fill up my attention with what I want, so that everything else gets pushed off the plate.
Exactly. That is so well stated. That is the whole point. Because what happens for most people most of the time is that attention is taken up with negativity and self-hatred and voices of doom and gloom and hopelessness and despair. Conversations about how I'm too busy and my life is never going to be the way I want, or there isn't enough money, or the kids are driving me crazy, or why am I in this relationship, or, you know, whatever it is that's going on. It just takes all of the attention. So as Alex was saying, you know, to turn the tables, to use the same thing that it does, but use it to our benefit. So I'm going to fill up all of my attention and awareness with what's possible for me in life and what's true about life, so that there's nothing, no attention, no awareness left over for all that hatefulness and suffering and dissatisfaction. That's it. I think it's what the Buddha taught.
Great.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it's what the Buddha taught.
Great.
And it just has such a very modern way of expressing it, that it's sometimes hard for people, I think, to make the connection. But that is what he taught. You know, turn your attention where you want your attention to be. Live the life that you want to have. Be what you want. Practice what you want. And I can't remember. There's some little wonderful thing. Joy will follow follow you like your own shadow or something like that.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, and that's it's just true.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
You know what else is true?
We have callers?
We have, looks like, four callers right now. Yay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Nicole from California.
Hey, Nicole.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Michael. Hi.
Hi.
What's going on this evening?
A lot of great stuff, and unfortunately, looks like my baby might start crying. Hold on here. Let me attend to him. So last time I called, I actually called and asked about being present with him, and
uh-huh.
you had suggested breathing together
uh-huh.
and me kind of noticing him in breath, out breath.
Uh-huh.
And so I called to report on that and actually asked for him to share something else that I'm working on.
Great.
So the in breath, out breath, he breathes pretty fast.
Yes.
So it was hard to do that, hard to match, because his breaths are so much more rapid than mine.
Little tiny lungs.
Yes, little tiny lungs and little tiny person. So that wasn't so easy to do, but I have been doing lots of things to help me stay present with him, and that's been very, very nice. And one of the things that I'm working on right now is trying to look at projection and the way that I sort of project being critical So I've sort of have this story in my life that other people are critical and I'm not. And that I somehow, you know, find myself surrounded by very critical people again
uh-huh.
and again. And so I've been looking at, well, where is this in me? Who inside of me is critical?
Mm-hmm.
And my question, to be very concise, is how can I work with this? I heard on one of the podcasts that to embrace with compassion
mm-hmm.
is the way
mm-hmm.
to sort of help an aspect of ourselves that is, you know, not so easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my question. Embrace
okay.
with compassion.
All right. Well, the first piece of that is actually pretty simple and straightforward, because you're the one seeing people as critical.
Yes.
So the only way you can be doing that is basically being critical of them.
Absolutely. I have
yeah.
noticed that I'm very critical of people being critical.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
It's like being prejudiced about people who are prejudiced. Yeah.
Exactly.
Hating hateful people.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's a great way that conditioning has of fooling us into believing that what's going on is actually not going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's huge right there, because
mm-hmm.
If you and I are in whatever kind of relationship, you know, I'm your mother, or we're friends, or we're neighbors, whatever is going on, you are talking to me about whatever, and if I have something going about being criticized, then I'm going to hear what you're saying through a lens or a filter of criticism.
Mm.
But if I don't have that. Oh, now I've forgotten which one of us is which. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
If the person receiving the information doesn't have that filter of I'm being criticized, then whatever information comes in is going to be received through whatever filter that person has.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I'm coming to see that this particular lens, it's sort of like getting upset about something in someone else that's really inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that if I but the question I don't quite understand how to do is that I know to try to change this inside myself is not the path, because that's ego trying to change ego. So, but embracing with compassion, just noticing, okay, there's the person who's afraid of being critical. There's the person who's saying this person is very critical. There's the person who doesn't want to spend any time with this person. or there's the person who's criticizing someone else, whatever it is, just noticing it. My sense is that I also need to be compassionate towards, and I don't know if just noticing it is compassion or...
Well, you bring up, I see where you're headed with this. The person who's interesting in this is the person who's doing the observing.
Mm-hmm.
So if I say, oh, there's the person who is whatever, mm-hmm. I'm distancing myself. So I'm walking down the street and I think, boy, is he fat. Oh, there's the person who is critical of other people.
Right, right.
Well, who is that who just identified that?
Right.
Is there a disidentification there? Or is it simply the same process made to appear as if it's a different process? So I'm going to encourage you for a while yet to simply watch, not even to do the, oh, there's the person,
mm-hmm.
but simply to be aware of what is said.
Okay. Okay, just to be aware of what is said. That feels very concrete. I can hold on to that. Just to be aware of what is said, and maybe I can write down.
Yes, yes.
And writing on post-its, this is said, this is said.
Yeah, and to see if you notice anything about it. Like, does that process happen more at certain times than others? I'll give you a big hint about what I'm talking about here. Often when people are tired or hungry or that sort of thing, that critical voice will be more present. It seems to go with being agitated or irritated.
Okay, well, that's very, very helpful. I notice that I'm afraid of criticism from other people in a lot of different environments, and I'm catching on that there's also a very critical person who's criticizing other people in, you know, other kinds of environments besides the ones I've been afraid of. So that's kind of nice to see.
It is nice to see. And so rather than wanting to jump ahead to embrace anything, to just watch until you can see what all the pieces are to the puzzle.
That sounds very, very good. Just one last reflection. I have been, you know, now I'm a mom and I'm at home and I'm with my baby, and I just want to say that I feel so fortunate to have Sangha via calling in and listening to the podcast. So wonderful, and I feel so fortunate to have come to the monastery in the past and been able to practice, because being a mom is so much like going to the monastery.
Yes, it is.
In the sense that life is showing up, and my main job is to say yes, and I really feel grateful that I had a place to practice that, and certainly there's a lot for me to continue to practice.
Yeah, and I would add one other similarity. And that's that the stakes are really high.
Yes.
In much of life, you know, we can just kind of dee-dee-dee-dee around with conditioning. And it takes a long time to realize the importance of what's going on. But when we're doing intensive training, we see how much is at stake. You know, am I going to choose to live my life at this level of awareness, or am I going to choose egocentric karmic conditioning, basically? And then in parenting, am I going to choose to wake up and be as centered and present and live in compassion as much as possible, or shall I just continue to indulge the ego when it arises and wants me to go off and follow it around into karma? So it is a wonderful opportunity, and I am glad that you are taking advantage of it.
Me too. I feel very, very blessed. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Good
night.
Have
a great night. Okay.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
This is Nancy from Driftwood.
Hello.
And, well, howdy to both of you.
Hi.
I had a chance today to go listen to the podcast from 2 weeks ago where I called in for the first time and we touched on mental illness and how that might affect practice or not. And I just am feeling in a really calm place right now. And I don't think there's any further questions I have about our conversation, but you had asked me to get back in touch with you, so I am. And
okay.
I didn't know if there was anything further you wanted to say about.
Well, what I wanted you to do is listen to the show, because
uh-huh.
I could tell that the person I was talking to right then was not able to actually have the kind of distance on the conversation that would be helpful to have in order to hear what was being said.
Right. I was pretty gone.
Yeah. So it sounds like you did that, and now you're not gone, and that was the whole point.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did have one problem with some of the terminology. I think I've sorted it out for myself, and it might have even been later in the show when you were saying to someone else that fear isn't real, and I was what I sorted out for myself, because part of my symptomology is I guess massive adrenaline production at inappropriate times, but I think that maybe I understand that as those are just sensations, and fear itself is the story that there's something wrong with having those sensations.
You got it.
Okay.
Yeah. Fear is a label that gets put on a series of sensations. And what I was very likely pointing at is that only ego is afraid. In other words, it's the illusion of being separate from life that puts that label onto experiences in order to try to control a person.
So when I would wake up in the morning with a pounding heart and having trouble breathing and instantly go into that thought process, I'm so terrified, I'm so terrified, I'm so terrified.
Exactly.
Really one way to look at that would be to say, wow, my heart is really pounding.
Wow, pounding heart.
Yeah.
Woo! Lot of adrenaline going on here.
Right.
Yeah. But then immediately, as you say, conditioning wants to take it into a story. I'm so terrified. I'm so terrified. Well,
at one point,
the heart is pounding.
And at one point when I found myself after I'd listened to the podcast a couple of times thinking, you mean I wasted all those years being mentally ill for nothing? But it gave me a good laugh, because I thought, well, or I could say, woohoo, I'm waking up now.
Precisely. That is exactly the point. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Nothing matters. In Zen, or maybe it's in all of Buddhism, I don't know, the expression is the person who awakens to, in this case, her authentic nature in the morning doesn't mind dying in the afternoon.
Well, very nice. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Good
and
night.
I will be talking to you in about another hour, I believe, on another call.
All right. Wonderful.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Nancy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life. visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we've got three more callers here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
This is Todd calling from Airdrie, Canada.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Sherry. Hey, Michael.
Hi.
Hi.
What's going on there?
Well, quick weather reports, because I always enjoy your weather reports from Southern California. So we're having a Southern California day today.
Oh.
Stunningly beautiful, no clouds, no wind, 25 Celsius, 75 Fahrenheit for the Americans.
That's
really
lovely.
Beautiful fall day. Really gorgeous day.
Excellent. I'm
yeah.
very happy for you.
Oh, thank you. What I wanted to call about is a couple of things have come up since we talked last, and I signed up for the Living Beyond Karma intensive workshop or retreat or combination of all that. And what I noticed, I signed up Friday. Of course, all the conditioning just beat me to a pulp. I was even amazed at my own self that I was able to actually sign up because it was so much resistance against it. And then once I did it, it got freakishly, eerily quiet and has been ever since. And I'm really freaked out.
Yeah.
I'm
what
super
are they doing?
Freaked out.
They're amassing on the border, right?
Well, yeah, this is what I'm thinking. Are they in the war room, like, you know, with little strategies, little maps and little, you know, little strategies and stuff? And I just, it's been 3 days of really wonderful peace. And I've heard you say before, well, enjoy it.
Oh,
because this too shall pass. But I am enjoying it, I've got to say.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And it will pass.
Yeah.
And, so the beauty of having a time like this is when they tell you that you can't live without them, that they are the only thing giving you any hope at all of ever having a life, you can say, well, actually, I remember that period of time when you weren't there and
yeah.
the weather was even good and
yes.
I'm very
yeah.
happy.
Oh, it is, as you say, liberating, and it's really allowed me to just kind of just recommit to certain little areas of this practice that are going to be involved with the Living Beyond Karma intensive, and it's kind of allowed me to reshore up the foundation a bit with the toolkit from the monastery workshops and stuff. So it's been a nice little respite for the few days, and like you said, it probably won't last, but at least I'm prepared for it.
That's right. Because
I've had some really wicked backlashes from attending the monastery and from, you know, continuing this awareness practice.
You know, Todd, that's one of one of the best things that we can learn about practice.
Uh-huh.
Is that it does, conditioning does get into its little war room and gear itself all up and come at us.
Yeah.
And then it passes.
Yeah.
And sometimes there are those places of quiet. Sometimes we just kind of go back to dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
Uh-huh.
But if we know that it'll try another attack.
Right.
It will do its worst, and then that'll be it.
Yeah.
And we'll bob up on the other side of it.
Right.
So just keeping that in mind, to me, has become a great comfort.
Yes. It actually is, yeah.
Yeah, so this is going on right now.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
And soon it won't be.
Nope.
And something else will be going on, and
yeah.
There we are.
Right. And the second thing I've noticed with this, too, is that my wife has been involved in this practice for a while as well, and she has also signed up.
Ah.
And I'm just looking for an encouragement from you. I get a sense, just for myself, and I haven't really discussed it with her, but I get a sense that conditioning on both sides is going to really kind of, it looks a little juicy for conditioning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, we're in an intimate relationship, you know, we have a marriage, we have a partnership, and now we have a spiritual practice, which is, you know, it's our own individual practice, but sometimes there's some overlap and sometimes there's some discussion, and of course, I can't live in a privileged environment at home here where we would just, you know, custody of the eyes and walk around and just gasho with folded hands, although I do enjoy it. We've actually done a couple weekends and done that, and it has been very, very, Very wonderful.
That's
we have actually done some silent retreats here at home.
Yeah,
and
that's one of the best parts about doing this with a partner.
Yeah.
You can set up those periods of time, and the other person doesn't have to take it personally.
Right. Doesn't have to take it personally.
Yeah. And it probably would behoove both of you to be supportive of what the other is doing, but not too involved in it.
Yeah. That's kind of where I was going with, is just be supportive and encourage each other in a kind of a very general, non-specific way. But I sense getting into each other's content would be a bit dangerous.
Yeah, it always, because then conditioning just has more ammo. It's just going to be looking at the other person saying, oh, well, now that doesn't seem really in keeping with what you're doing. I thought you had part of your commitment was to, and what is that person?
Right. Yet there's a part of me that goes, wow, this is also another opportunity, because a lot of my conditioning is triggered by the mirroring that she creates for me, because I project on her all the stuff that I'm seeing and experiencing in life. So I also sense, wow, geez, this could be a really good practice opportunity if I can keep disidentifying and come back to center and not get taking
That's
it personally
right.
and getting caught up in it.
Yeah, it will be a wonderful opportunity for each of you.
Yes.
And if you can, you know, when we're in a relationship like that, one of the big things that goes on is projection.
Yes.
So if in that relationship we can each own our own projections, then that's very helpful to practice. If we ever slide into the, well, I think that's a projection. I think you're projecting. Then the devil has hold of us.
Oh,
and,
believe me.
And we're no longer practicing. We're actually
serving
conditioning.
Well, we've both been caught in that, where we call out the voices of conditioning on the other person, and conditioning just comes back in a wrath. It isn't pretty.
No.
Because you're not coming from your heart.
Exactly.
And I don't sense the heart would call itself on itself.
Oh, no.
No.
And that's, I always encourage people not to use practice against one another.
Yes.
It's the worst, because
it is.
Yeah, because this is such heart opening work, and then to be in a heart open place and have somebody attack the heart.
Right.
That's a hard one to deal with.
Well, it's interesting you said that, because that has occurred in the past.
Mm-hmm.
We get vulnerable and the heart opens, and then the other person the conditioning sees the opening and then goes for it. And then the heart closes, and then, you know, we get caught in our conditioning, and then it can get a bit scary. I just sense that if we do discuss what is kind of going on, a lot of reflective listening would be very valuable here.
Very valuable.
Just reflect back what the other person is experiencing, what they're doing, and that, and then there's no kind of analyzing or, you know, no kind of
advice giving or
right advice helpful. Giving or just reflect. I was just thinking encouragement would be just the sense that I got for myself was just reflect back anytime they talk about what is kind of happening.
Yeah. In fact, you if you want to have more of a sense of doing it together, that would be a great thing to set up, you know, once a week or whatever. Take time, just like your reflective listening buddies.
Yes.
And one of you talks for 15 minutes about what the other reflects, and then you change roles, and that's it. So you get to stay kind of informed about what's going on with your partner, so you can be sensitive to one another.
True.
But you don't have to get into one another's stuff.
I really like that. I really like that, because I like the point about being sensitive to maybe what's something they're going through in a particular area or a particular time of the program. Then you can go, oh, I see why this is kind of happening, or I don't have to take it on because this is what they're going through, and if I just reflect it back, then I'm not engaging in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't have to take it personally. I don't have to make this about me.
Right.
This is another person, and the other person gets to be a real person besides being involved with me.
Right. And they're adequate into their own life experience.
Exactly.
And I can keep reminding myself that I'm also adequate to my life experience.
Precisely. And you know, projecting adequacy onto somebody else is a very good way to know it for ourselves.
Oh, I like that. I really like that. Wonderful.
All right.
Well, excellent, Sherry. Thanks, Michael. I love the show. Just can't get enough of it. Use the archives all the time. And again, just lots of gratitude that you show up. And you know what it does? it inspires me to show up and encourages me, and I really appreciate both of your commitment to this program and the entire program.
Thank you. Thank
Just
you,
a quick shout-out. So thanks again, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Todd.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. Always great to be appreciated.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's we're very visible or audible or something, and we don't actually know what goes on once we hang up the phone or put the podcast up on the web. So it is nice to hear that people are using the show and feeling the benefit of it.
Yes, it is wonderful. And I enjoyed a lot of the ideas about interacting with another person that we're close to.
Mm-hmm. You're finding yourself in that same situation, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Great. Sherry, we have at least two more callers here.
Right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. And could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Maria. I'm calling from Washington State.
Hello, Maria.
Hello. I was calling to see if you could talk about, it's something that I've heard you say before, to the effect of when we have a big decision to make, or it feels like we have a big decision,
mm-hmm.
to come to get centered and then let life kind of make the next move, or let life, you know, unfold however it unfolds. And that sounds really great, and I feel like...
Except for the terror, you mean?
Except for the terror. And feeling like everything hangs in the balance of this decision I make.
Yep.
So frankly, it, you know, most of me just doesn't believe that that's possible.
Right. Well, let me ask you a couple of things about it, okay?
Okay.
When do you need to make this decision?
Well,
I mean, do you have a couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's, I don't have a definite deadline, but I have a sense of urgency anyway.
Oh, of course, and you know what urgency is, right? That's how conditioning gets us to make bad decisions. It gets us
urgent,
and then we jump into something so that we can regret it for the rest of our lives. So here, I'll give you all of my favorite things, okay, on decision
making. Okay.
One of them is, that's why I ask if you had enough time, because it can be fun to spend a week so we'll just say one decision is yes and one is no, however that plays out for you. Okay.
Okay.
So you spend 1 week as if you did X, as if you said yes to this, or as if you're going to whatever it is, and just see what happens. And I mean, you really put yourself into it as if that's the case. Okay. I need to do this.
Okay.
Good. Make a list of this. All right. I'll need to take care of that. Good. And just see what happens. Then the next week, you've made the other decision.
Okay.
Okay. And you throw yourself into it the same way. The other thing that I like to do is to say, okay, I'm going to, you know, do this, 1 week that, and then on, you know, look at the calendar on Sunday morning, I'm going to wake up and I will know. I'll remind myself that that's the case the night before, and then I'll wake up in the morning and I'll know what my decision is. And conditioning will try to talk me out of it, but I will know. Okay, so that's another one that's fun. The third one that I think is a really critical part of this is that your acceptance of yourself has to be unconditional regardless.
Okay.
Because here's the deal. If you can be beaten up for making a mistake, whatever decision you make will be a mistake.
Right.
Right? You know
what
I mean?
I see that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, conditioning will just jump in and say it was wrong regardless. And, you know, it could be the best thing you ever did, But by the time conditioning gets finished with you, you will believe that you have ruined your life completely.
Right.
And people live their whole lives like that.
Yeah.
Really believing that they have made some hideous mistake, and there no such thing has happened. It's just that they will believe it, and they'll go along with the beating.
Yeah.
So it has to be Maria, I really don't care what you do. the only thing that matters is that you're all right, that you're happy.
Yeah.
And if you're in that relationship with yourself, you cannot go wrong. You just can't.
Well, one thing that's good is that I attended There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat earlier this summer.
Uh-huh.
And so I do hear those reassurances coming into my brain when it seems like a good time for them to come in.
Yes.
You know, I will hear something supportive from my center.
Now, a little encouragement about that, okay?
Okay.
Always, always, but especially at times like this,
yeah,
you need to be living in reassurances.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the only thing you're focused on. You've got those things in your ears, and you're listening all the time. Because conditioning is there all the time, ready to give you an experience of it.
Right.
So you need to be letting the heart have at least equal airtime.
Okay.
Because otherwise, what happens to us is, you know, people will say, "There's nothing wrong with you. Oh my God, it just changed my life." But then after a while, you know, it just sort of faded. Well, of course it did, because what happened is they stopped doing the work. So they
right.
stopped listening to the reassurances and stopped centering and all of those kinds of things, and conditioning just slowly got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Until
right.
the only voice they hear is the voice of conditioning. So we really do have to make an effort
okay.
on behalf of ourselves.
Okay. That's a really good reminder. Yeah, because, of course, it was a huge experience and, you know, felt like a real kind of life-changing, perspective-changing, heart-opening experience.
Yes.
And then... But yeah, I can honor that experience by continuing with the work.
Precisely. And
yeah.
if you don't, conditioning will slowly close that over.
Well,
if
I can see that happening already.
Yeah, if what it's doing is closing your heart.
Yeah.
So we gotta
okay.
get the old recorder out and just stay in conversation with yourself. Stay in conversation with all of those folks who get frightened and are insecure and anxious, and they're really looking to you to take care of them and let them know that it's going to be okay and that you're going to be there no matter what. And
right.
win, lose, or draw, you're going to be with yourself, and mistakes are an illusion.
Right.
No such thing as a mistake.
Oh, I love that.
It's true. It really is true. There
yeah.
is no such thing. It is absolutely a figment of the imagination. And, you know, if you ever want to know how I know that's true, I'll tell you.
Okay. How do you know that's true?
Well, I know that that's true because there is only one reality. And in
oh.
that one reality, there is whatever there is. For
right.
a mistake to happen, there would have to be at least one other reality in which something different happened. And there's no such thing. So we may not like what happened.
Yeah.
But that's not the same as it's a mistake. And the thing about it, the most beautiful part of that is, that when we get to a place of complete acceptance for ourselves and for life, what we do is look back over our lives and realize that every step we took was absolutely perfect.
Right.
Even the ones that conditioning would scream and yell and tell us were a mistake. Because those were the hard places very often that caused us to wake up.
Yeah. Well, that's
and
great.
If as a result of everything that happens in your life, you get to a place of unconditional love and acceptance for Maria.
Yeah.
Every moment will be a treasure.
I can really see that.
I know. And isn't it fun? Because when you really see it, it's so logical. It's just so obvious. But
yeah, that's what I love is the logic of it.
Yep. Conditioning so wants us to believe what is not true.
Yeah.
Okay,
well, those are some great things to consider. Thank you.
You are most welcome. Let us know, okay?
Let us
know how this whole thing goes.
Okay, I will. Thank you, and thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Okay, good night.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Maria. Sherry, that was fun. I enjoyed your description there of mistakes and all that.
Mm-hmm. I look at that so often. That business of being taught to believe stuff that is just not true. It's just not true. That's all there is to it. But because people have been taught to believe it from such an early age, it never occurs to them that it's not true. And then when there's a little opening and the lights come on, you go, oh my gosh, well, that's so silly. How could I actually have believed that? Because what is true is so clearly and obviously true. Mistake being one of those kinds of things. My other personal all-time favorite of that is You Should Have Known Better. People live in hell through entire lifetimes because a voice tells them they should have known better. And as soon as there's that little crack in the conditioning and the lights come on, you go, how could I have known better? That's insane. You can't know what hasn't happened. That's nuts.
Yes, I think you talk about it that in There Is Nothing Wrong With You, don't you?
Oh, I hope so. I should talk about it in everything we do.
Because I only know what I know.
We only sort of know what
yeah.
has already happened. And,
yeah.
you know, once we do a fair bit of practice, we realize, I don't even know that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here. I get what I get of this moment. And that's it. Somebody's standing right next to me. They got something completely different.
Yes.
So we never actually know anything. We certainly don't know the past. I mean, if you read studies, that people do about memory and what people conclude and all
yes.
of that.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's obvious we don't know anything about what has happened. We don't know anything about what's going on now. You know, those studies where they do a simulated car accident or some sort of a mugging or something, and there are 10 people there, and they see 10 different things. I mean, they see different ages and races, and
yes.
people are dressed in. It's like, it's crazy. We are just so projecting our reality all the time. And then we're going to believe that we should have known what hasn't happened yet? Yikes. We catch on to that and just, oh, my gosh. You know, there's really nothing to do here but relax.
Yes. Take a breath.
Take a breath and a break. Speaking of which.
You're reading my mind. We're going to take a quick break here and we'll be right back.
Porch Dog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, this is Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Oh, I was just using my phone as the computer, sorry.
Oh.
To listen, I didn't think I'd come back around in the queue.
Sorry,
did you
Todd.
Forget something?
What's that?
I was going to ask, did you forget something?
No, I was just outside and I didn't want to haul the whole computer outdoors, so I just kept the phone as my listening device. I hope I haven't stepped on anyone's toes.
Not a problem.
Okay. Great. Thanks very much. I'll hang up then.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Great. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Yep. Yes, this computer's playing little tricks on me here. I thought I had another caller, and then that caller disappeared. And there was Todd.
Bless his heart. Just trying to go out and enjoy his beautiful Canadian evening.
Yes, and listen to Open Air.
Mm-hmm. So does this leave you without a caller?
It does, and it does not leave me without questions.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Meaning email questions.
Right.
Hello, Sherry and Michael. Sherry, would you please talk about guilt and how we can use awareness practice when guilt causes suffering? Is there, quote, good, unquote, or, quote, legitimate, unquote, guilt? Or is it all just another ploy by conditioned mind to keep us unconscious? In my experience, guilt is a bodily sensation accompanied by emotion and commentary from conditioned mind. How can I loosen the hold it has on me? I make so many decisions based on guilt, some of which are associated with completely imaginary scenarios or interactions. Thank you so much for your time and for the Open Air program. Gasho, from a listener in Washington State.
All right. So the listener came to the actual accurate conclusion early on.
Oh.
Guilt is useless. And That's another one of those things like you should have known better or mistakes,
yeah.
Where we are taught that guilt is what keeps us from doing bad things. If you feel bad, then you'll learn something and you'll stop doing bad things. And that's just absolutely not true. And of course, bunches of people, as with the writer, live in guilt that has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
So how do we then learn what to do and what not to do? Well, how we learn what to do and what not to do is by paying attention. And when we pay attention, now when we do something that we feel bad about, and there's a difference between feeling bad because conditioning is beating you up and feeling bad because something hurts your heart. One is a mental, psychological sort of an experience, and
yes.
The other is more a physical experience. There's just a deep sadness that accompanies a realization that we have done something that is harmful or hurtful or
yes.
Painful to someone else. And when we stay in that, I experience it as disappointment. Much more than anything else. There's just a deep sadness and disappointment that this has happened. That's the thing. Staying in that experience is the thing that helps us know for next time. Being beaten up about it is just something that conditioning does to keep us in a place of suffering.
Yeah.
So the bottom line of it is that anything, any useful information, any useful information, comes to us through insight, not through a conversation in our heads. So we can be walking along. In fact, I bet there are a lot of people listening who know this experience very well. You're just going along in your life, and all of a sudden there's a full body awareness of something. You know, you're in the situation, you hear what you said, and you hear it from the perspective of the person you said it to.
Yes.
And suddenly there's a clarity about what that sounds like outside my own reality.
Uh-huh.
And with that can be a, oh, I didn't mean it that way. I didn't mean that. Okay, so that kind of experience but there's no judgment with it. That's a really important aspect. There's no judgment. There's
yes.
no voice saying you're a bad person for this. It's just like a scene from a play or a movie or something. There's just, there you are. You're in it. You're experiencing it. And so that kind of thing will help inform us about what it is that we're doing, and will very likely cause us to sort of recalibrate our response to things or our behavior.
Yes.
Yeah. So to feel bad or guilty is just a waste of time. And here's the real clincher and the real argument against guilt. In the length of time, for the amount of space that person is feeling guilty, they're not present to what's going on now.
Yes.
And that increases our chances of doing something else that we're going to feel bad about, because when we're not present, when we're unconscious, we're what's behind the wheel is egocentric karmic conditioning. And we know it is pretty devoted to the maximum amount of dissatisfaction and suffering that it can manage at all times. So if we want not to continue to do things that hurt our heart, that are unskillful, that we wish we weren't doing, then the best route for us, the best action to take, is to work as hard as we can to stay as present as we can. Because when we're present, we are far less likely to do and say things that we will regret later.
Yes, yes. And I know for myself, when you were talking about, it's like when I allow the beating to happen, I don't allow myself to stay in the experience of disappointment that seems to me is ultimately helpful in the long run.
Yes, that is so absolutely true. We just jump to conditioning. Kind of, it's sort of a small child reaction. So I've done something bad, and now I need to be disciplined or punished. And as soon as I'm disciplined or punished, then I feel better. Then that's over. And I think for a lot of people, it takes a while of doing that before the feeling bad is continuous.
Uh-huh.
I bet you see that with your kids. You know, they do something, they get in trouble, and then, you know, they're over it.
Yes.
Just in a matter of seconds, because
yes.
it's just, no, don't do that, put that down, or whatever it is. Okay. And then we go on. But
yes.
slowly over time, a child builds this backlog of things to feel bad about.
Yes.
Things I've done wrong, ways that I'm not okay, things that people don't approve of, that turn in eventually to what's wrong with me. And in that belief system, then, what justifies the beatings that I'm getting? I deserve those beatings because of all of this.
Yes.
So my encouragement to anybody who feels guilt or regret or remorse or any of those kinds of things is look at whatever the subject matter is once. Get it once. Most people that we know, the sins and crimes are so minor, really.
Yes.
It's kind of silly. But say I said something to somebody that upset them, and so I take in that information. And then I turn my attention to how I want to be instead. And that's where I keep my attention to the best of my ability. And I trust that life is going to give me all of the information that I need to keep me from doing or being that way again. And if I go unconscious and I, you know, that's what happens again, then I just have to get it that I'm going to keep having that experience until I'm no longer willing to be distracted and talked into going unconscious so that I will be led into doing that thing that I'm then going to get beaten about.
Yes.
And it really is that kind of circular process that goes on. That's how karma is maintained.
Yes. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Yeah.
I have another email question here, and I think we have a couple minutes to get through it.
All right.
Hi, Sherry and Michael. I am in a relationship that I think I should get out of. We have ups and downs, but I think overall it is unhealthy for both of us. But when a moment comes where I think I should end it, I can't get the words out. Recently, I have decided to just stay present, not make decisions or worry about the future, and see what happens. We're currently in a, quote, good phase, unquote, so it doesn't feel as urgent as it has before. Conditioning is telling me there is something wrong with this approach. The voices are telling me I shouldn't enjoy any time with my partner because in the back of my mind, I know it might be ending soon. They're also telling me that I'm just being cowardly and that I'm being totally unfair to my partner by not committing one way or the other. For some reason, I am really afraid of the notion of just letting things happen. I'm surprised to have a voice telling me that it's not okay to stay present when my spiritual practice revolves around this very idea. I'm having a hard time figuring out what's coming from center.
Okay, we can just stop right there.
Yeah, that's the end.
Oh, good. Because it's really easy to figure out what's coming from center. Center doesn't talk to us in full English sentences. That's just right there. So a voice is telling me this, a voice is telling me that, a voice is telling me this. That's all conditioning. So that's all not from center.
Yes.
And all of this, I'm being told that I shouldn't be, you know, that that's all in that pile of things I don't need to give my attention to.
Uh-huh.
All of these ideas about this is unfair and you shouldn't do this and it's not okay to do that, it's all conditioning. So if the relationship is providing all of that clarity about what conditioning does, that seems like a grand and glorious thing. And all of that drama about what this means and what I should do and what's okay and what's not okay is just there to keep a person from being present to what is. So even the, you know, I think this is destructive, but we're in a good phase now. And, you know, that's just all more of that conversation. What's possible for us is to say, I don't know. I have no idea what's going on. I'm going to do this for the next 6 months or whatever it is. And I'm going to drop all conversation about it and use it as a workshop, an opportunity. I mean, assuming a person isn't being physically abused or emotionally or mentally abused or that sort of thing. And if they are, but they're finding that out through a conversation in their head, okay, they still, the same rules apply. Drop all of that and see from right here, center, breathing, what's actually going on. And over a period of time, a person will know. Yeah, I could stay here forever, and there's no reason to. This is not where I want to be in my life. Or this is a perfectly fine relationship. All relationships have up and downs. And as soon as I stop having as my primary intimate relationship the voice in my head, and I'm much more present to the physical person sharing my life with me, then, you know, things seem to
to go in a different direction.
Yes, it's amazing how dropping all that and just being here can offer some perspective.
Oh, it's astounding. And getting a real clear understanding that the actual relationship is with the voice in the head, not with the other person, and beginning to get it that the voice in the head really dislikes the other person.
Yes.
The voice in the head wants the intimate relationship with with me. Wants all of my time, all of my attention, wants me to do exactly what it says all the time. Really doesn't want anybody else interfering in that. It gets very testy about anything that begins to threaten its ability to be in control and call all the shots. So that's the practice. To practice seeing that system for what it is, turning the attention away from it, back into the present, back to the breath, back to here, and then see what this other human is, this external physical human is, and what that relationship is like.
Yes, yes. Very helpful,
right.
Sherry, as usual.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for a great show.
See you later.
See you later.
Bye.
Okay, good night.